Well, if you just clicked on this podcast or just downloaded this podcast, don't worry. This is not going to be a 10 reasons to build the wall podcast. It's not going to be the 5 reasons why Trump is stupid or the 7 reasons to impeach Trump podcast. This last few days with the wall, or a potential national emergency for immigration or on immigration, is a teaching moment for anybody interested in how and why we are being manipulated in this country. And we're going to talk about that in podcast 794. Well, before we get going, we got to talk about payment processors. So there's a revolution in business today, and it has to do with electronic payments. I'm sure you all remember, if you paid with a credit card a long time ago, you had to go through this mechanical process. It took a long time for companies to get paid. Now people can get paid right away. So if you're in business for yourself, it's great if you have a payment processor that can custom fit, that can work with you to figure out payment processing solutions. This is what Relia Fund does. R-E-L-I-A, Relia Fund at reliafund.com. I work with them as a payment processor. I have Relia Fund has set me up with an ability to actually get payment through checks. If you're a developer, if you develop websites, if you're in business for yourself, you want a payment processor that isn't going to be off the shelf. It's going to be somebody who can work with your developer, who can work with you to develop custom solutions, whether it's credit card payments or check payments, any of that. Relia Fund does that. Relia Fund is a payment processor. They have been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than 2 decades. So they know what they're doing. They're the OGs when it comes to the payment processing revolution in this country as it pertains to business. And here's the best part. If you're a developer, if you're a small business person, if you're interested in Relia Fund at reliafund.com, when you call them, you will talk to an actual human being, Kevin Hill or Greg Lowry. Remember, no long-term contracts. They're secure and technology-focused, and they're great. 866-243-5040. That's 866-243-5040. I use Relia Fund. You should, too. Check them out at reliafund.com. Now, I've been talking a lot about how much I hate my printer, and I hate it. All people who work with IT systems hate printers because they're so ridiculous. I hate my printer, not because I don't like the printer I have. I love the printer. The problem is the print cartridges are ridiculously expensive. In fact, it's highway robbery. And there is a solution, and that is Cartridge World in Maple Grove. They can save you up to 30% compared to the big box stores. They're great. Cartridge World cartridges are guaranteed to perform as good as new. I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. I think they're better than the new ones, to tell you the truth, and they're way cheaper. Free delivery on qualifying orders. If you're listening to this podcast in California or Florida, they can take care of you as well. Here's their number, 763-420-6632, 763-420-6632. Ask for Jason or click on the banner at the top of the page at the top of the BobDavisPodcast.com that says Cartridge World. Well, I just got back from Midnight Sushi. Sushi happy hour. So that was really awesome. And I thought, I'm going to sit down and do this podcast quickly with the understanding that I've been told recently that you really need to be careful of the things that you say at night. In the light of day, it's a different story, but at night, you have to really be careful of what you say. And nighttime generally is my go time, so I feel pretty good tonight. It is nighttime at the time I'm recording this podcast, and we are just coming down off of at least a week of insanity in the media, and the crisis at the border, the southern border with Mexico in the United States. So I'm going to tell you what I think of the, quote, crisis at the border. So just imagine sort of flaming font in caps, breaking news, crisis at the border. And I will actually tell you what I think later in this podcast. And I'm going to do it not because I want you to agree with me, but because I want you to know my position. Although I don't really think my position on immigration colors the opinions expressed in the following podcast. But I'm going to say what I feel, even though I'm not advocating for or against what I feel. But because I think listeners and subscribers deserve to know where I stand, and then that might help you evaluate what you're hearing. But most of this podcast is really not partisan. It's more of anything. It is an observation, because this is not an advocacy podcast. It has not been an advocacy podcast for a long time, because there is way too much advocacy these days in our media, and it's everywhere. And this week, just this last week, and generally in the present time frame that I am, you know, publishing this podcast, which is, you know, the second week of January, anyone and everyone creating content of any kind, broadcast, cable news, commentary, you know, to be printed in newspapers or on websites, blogs, podcasters, and YouTubers, all of them took the bait. And they took it hook, line, and sinker. And the bait was first the shutdown. And when that really didn't work to gain real traction, in which everyone in the country was talking about it, then we started talking about declaring an executive emergency. And I'll talk about that a little bit in this podcast, but this really isn't even a podcast about the facts regarding presidential power. This is about media manipulation. And as soon as it became something that was going to be a national emergency, well, then everybody bit. And why? Because he was going to declare an emergency. And this whole thing bears some discussion. What happened in terms of the mechanics of this in the media? So it wasn't the number of federal workers furloughed. It wasn't the national parks with garbage supposedly overflowing. It wasn't people who didn't get their checks. It isn't the IRS being shut down or the Securities and Exchange Commission. It's not the horror stories, stories of people being repatriated or not, or the murders and cop killings, the aggrieved and the victims. It really isn't that. What it is it's the possibility, the specter that we're going to have a president who's going to declare a national emergency. Now, in this podcast, there's not going to be a discussion of what a national emergency is, beyond an explanation required for perspective, because I'm not going to be doing any partisan hacking here. But here's the bottom line. The president scheduled an address Tuesday night and then addressed the nation. And before the address, going back 36 to 48 hours, they were all at it. Headlines: he's going to declare an emergency. He's not going to declare an emergency. There's going to be martial law. Can he declare a national emergency? Fact-checking a national emergency. He could be impeached for it. They're vetting all the options, and they won't do it because they don't want him to get impeached. This doesn't rise to the level of an emergency, and so forth and so on. And that is all anybody was talking about from roughly the first day of the year. They say the first week of the new year sets the tone for the rest of the year. As a nation, our first week of the new year, think about this, was spent arguing about something that as of right now did not happen and probably was never going to happen. It was a steamroller. Everywhere you turned, it didn't matter. Even the conspiracy theory idiots on YouTube were putting out YouTube videos that said, this is it, Trump's declaring an emergency, martial law, asking whether or not people had food and water and where they were going to go, and that people should make sure their guns are loaded. It's the beginning. It's the beginning of the end. It's the end. The president does what? He goes on TV and says, here comes the big bombshell. He's going to keep the government shut down until he gets funding for the wall or barrier. No declaration of an emergency. Whoops. And that day, I said, well, I thought to myself, I'm going to do a podcast about what an emergency is. And of course, I did a little research because I realized after I did some research that everybody is doing podcasts about what an emergency is. So you should already know because everyone and his brother is doing, you know, complex, podcasts about the legalities of an executive declaration and what court is going to hear it if a lawsuit is brought in, on and on and on. So my research taught me that an executive declaration of an emergency is very interesting. Obviously, many, many people were saying things about it. And honestly, I expected the president to announce an emergency. And by the time you hear this podcast, he may have announced an emergency. So what? There are already scores of executive emergencies in effect as we speak, some dating back to Jimmy Carter, actually a lot dating back to Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton, James Carter, of course, the 39th president. Some date back to Lincoln, although I'm not sure if any of those are still in effect, and Lincoln was the 16th president. And I also found out that even George Washington had his own form of declaring an emergency, which was simply to activate the state militias. But that's another podcast. Aside from too much, you know, I don't want to go too much into detail, but the difference between myself and the rest of these ninnies is that I'm committed to pointing out the waypoints, because the waypoints in this process is where we actually learn something. And by refusing to take sides and refusing to predict the future in these interesting arguments, when you wait, you learn. And here's what I learned. I sat around here Monday and Tuesday researching, and then I got all my research, and then I decided, you know what, I'm going to wait. And I ended up sitting around Monday and Tuesday watching Route 66 and other old shows on television and doing little research and being, you know, and scanning and continuously sort of watching to see what was going on, and otherwise being shocked in this country as what passes for so-called analysis and news. And what was happening? Virtually everybody was taking the president's bait. So in the second half of this podcast, I'm going to explain what I mean, and then I will tell you what I think about both the border and the whole tactic that this president is using. Well, we're coming off the holiday season, and if you spent any time in your house, you probably looked around and thought, we should probably remodel this place. And if you can, you're probably looking around for a builder. So wintertime is the time that we kind of sit around and make plans, because we really can't be outside that much. And that is where Whitetail Builders comes in, because maybe 2019 is going to be the year that you finally decide to finish the basement, add a bathroom, or even finish the garage, or build that man cave that you've been talking about for years. Or get rid of the rotting deck as soon as you can in the spring and replace it with something that you can enjoy during the glorious summer and early fall season on into football weather. Whatever your dreams are, to build your dream, you got to have a builder who's going to be by your side from start to finish so your expectations are met. With Whitetail Builders, the process is just as important as the end result, and I am happy to refer you to Whitetail Builders of Andover. They're online at whitetailbuildersinc.com. There's a contact page there where you can leave your name and number and tell them your dreams, or you can just call Randy Graybaugh at 612-282-8801. That's 612-282-8801. He was telling me this morning about a job where they have completely taken out a bunch of walls and made a bedroom suite with a huge bathroom that is really going to be spectacular. And of course, Randy has been at this client's house doing the work with the guys, paying attention to details all along. Call Randy Graybaugh at 612-282-8801. If you're into home improvement and you need help with a project, this is the guy you want to talk to, because Whitetail is focused on details. They will be with you every step of the way, and you will love the results. Check out the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. It's got some pictures and some results, and you can kind of get an idea of how it works. But really, the secret sauce with Whitetail is Randy. 612-282-8801, 612-282-8801, Whitetail Builders, helping you construct your dreams. So, this wouldn't be the first time in a podcast that I have suggested that we are being manipulated. We are being manipulated on a grand scale. Now, I could take the view that it's Orwellian. I could take the view that it's the deep state. I could take the view that aliens are actually running things and this is all just something to keep us busy. There's all kinds of different ways I could go with it in today's world, but I am not sure that I think. In fact, I would just say that I don't think it's Orwellian. Politicians have always used what has been called the bully pulpit to appeal to the people over the heads of those long-haired, worthless lawmakers. Who named bully pulpit? It was Teddy Roosevelt who named it the bully pulpit because he realized what a tool the presidency was for controlling the media battle space. And so he named it the bully pulpit by saying basically that the presidency is a great platform for mass communications at a time when Roosevelt was president, just at the dawn of the 20th century. Almost every major city and almost all small towns and medium cities had two or three newspapers. And so the newspapers were the chief form of media at the time. But politicians have always sought a way to control the discussion. Governors do it. Presidents do it. Sure, the mechanics of communication have changed. The channels are different. If we go back to the Roosevelt era, Roosevelt basically was very comfortable with the media because it was six guys. And they would press into the Oval Office to have a press conference with Roosevelt. He also premiered the idea of a fireside chat, which essentially is what the president continued the tradition of as an Oval Office chat. President Roosevelt did fireside chats because he could control the media battle space. And he learned that if the president decides to address the nation, the networks will generally carry it. The State of the Union messages have always been a tradition, but now it has become this huge, national moment when everybody watches the State of the Union. We all have to talk about what the president's going to say, and we all have to talk about what he said and how did he do and everything else when they used to mail it in. The other thing is the national tours, the imperial presidency, where the president takes a trip, which distracts everyone, or in the case of Ronald Reagan, he appealed to the nation to support his policies by going around the country and speaking at events or rallies. And you saw Trump and Obama and Bush and Clinton do this. The last time that anybody really used this bully pulpit with an effective result was when Clinton was under fire and was about to be impeached. He addressed the nation, and I will never forget, in the background of the shot was a vase of flowers and a lamp. And people were saying, well, he's going to be gone. They're going to get rid of him and everything else. And at the time, I was working in New Orleans, and I was in the gym in New Orleans working out, and there were a ton of televisions, and they were all along one wall. And on every single television was President Clinton. And there was no sound. It was just his face. And I thought to myself, he's already won because he is on every single television. And when that was broadcast, the whole country stopped to watch Clinton on television for 25 or 30 minutes. And of course, it didn't hurt that he then responded with an attack on, an aspirin factory in the Sudan. So again, it's all the uses of the imperial presidency to get people talking about what you want them to talk about. So whether it's the newspapermen, radio and television and TV broadcasters, cable TV news, and now we have social media, which all that does is that allows everyone to be or have the same sort of exposure as anybody else. So what happens is president now use communications channels to go to their people, the people, to develop support and grow their base or to shore up their base so that they can get their policy ideas passed. There's a couple of differences. One of the main differences with Trump, and also it was true with Obama as well, and a little less with Bush, but the idea of surrogates. So whatever happens, the surrogates rush forward to write editorials, to go live on their Facebook page, to go live on their radio or TV show, do podcasts, and talk about why Trump is right. And we should all do what Trump says. And he's a genius, and he's playing four-dimensional chess. Or he's an idiot, he's a despot, he needs to be impeached, he's crazy, he's a child, whatever it is. So we have everyone using these communication channels. Here's the thing. Despite this president's slightly different approach, regardless of whether you agree or disagree with the president, when everybody rushes out to comment and talk about it, then he's already won because he is controlling the conversation. Yes, this president has a slightly different approach. He uses the social media channels brilliantly. He also uses and activates these surrogates and supporters brilliantly without ever speaking to them. He gets them just fired up to use their channels to activate their core groups on social media and within their tribal groups, whether they're podcasters, YouTubers, whether they're on television or whatever. He's got Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity, in addition to all of the Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity wannabes attacking him, as well as all the racial, either supporting him or, in the case of the Rachel Maddow wannabes, detracting and saying what a fool he is about the wall. So that's what we're all talking about. This is a massive manipulation by a ruthless president whose chief mentor for years in New York was Roy Cohn, who cut his teeth in the Army McCarthy hearings, who is generally recognized as a sleazebag and a terrible person whose chief modus operandi was to issue the worst possible threats and frighten people with lawsuits and everything else, even if he wasn't that great of a lawyer. And he taught Trump everything he knows. And so Trump doesn't back down. He raises the stakes, and he will continue to raise the stakes in order to get control of the media battle space. I don't like to assign beliefs or motives. I wouldn't know why he does this, other than simply, if you look at the Roy Cohn, experience as far as Roy Cohn being Trump's mentor back in New York City, back in the day, he taught him how to do this. So I'm not going to spend, 5 or 10 minutes telling you how the president is really concerned about the crisis on the border and all of that. You're going to have to determine that for yourself. You're going to have to learn how to figure things out without having AP fact check or the Washington Post fact check or having other people tell you what to think. And if you have other people telling you what to think, you are deep in the manipulation, whether it is sinister or this is how we do business in America today. Here's what I do know. And this is actually the reality. Here's what we do know. At the end of 2018, President Trump was president and presided over one of the biggest political defeats for Republicans in history. He's a Republican president. His party got shellacked. 40 seats in the House. They very nearly lost the Senate. Whatever agenda this president had is out the window at this point. Why? Because the House of Representatives is arguably the most powerful body in our republic, far more powerful than the president, because it is considered to be closest to the people, since presidents are appointed through the Electoral College. Now, the difference is Congress tends to act very slowly, which infuriates every president who has ever served, and acts roughly with seams showing, arguments going on, people riding horses into the rotunda, people doing, dancing down the hall and on roofs, and people releasing information. So Congress is messy, but Congress, when it finally decides to act, is quite powerful in this country. And when I say Congress, I'm talking about the House. I haven't even gotten into the Senate, which, despite a slim majority for Republicans, is not easily cowed. So Congress together, both houses, has tremendous, to use Trump's words, tremendous power. They control the purse strings. They can impeach and remove the president. They can determine initiatives. They can end, if they act together, the Senate and House can end national emergencies as quickly as they can be declared. So the Congress has a lot of power because it's considered closest to the people. It's the only people that we directly elect. And losing one whole House of Congress for a president is a big deal. Yeah, sure, lose a few seats at the midterm, even several, even 20. But to lose 40 when political polling indicated that those seats, while in close races and certainly could be losses, could have been retained if certain things had been done differently. And I don't think that's a debate. I think that's pretty well set. And this is what happened to President Obama, by the way, who also suffered a midterm shellacking in President Obama's words. So he had to dig out from that as well. And to a certain extent, Obama did some of this stuff, but Trump is really an aficionado at this and a maestro at this. And rightly so, I believe, Republicans blamed the president. So just rewind the tape a month, if you can. Everybody was pissed off at Trump because if you're on the right, every right-wing person in the country was pissed off at Trump. Sure, the people on the left hate him, so they were mad. But they were triumphant and happy because they had won the midterms. And now we have Democrats already talking about impeaching the president. His whole base, the president's base, which, by the way, is without principle, but that's another podcast, was split on the reasons, media and the Democrats and other nonsense all going on, people blaming younger candidates. The Democrats did all this amazing stuff. We didn't do any of this stuff, blah, 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 blah. Look, Trump went out and said a bunch of crazy stuff. It upset people for 2 years. The Democrats managed to capitalize on it. I don't need to relitigate the election. It was a fault of the National Congressional Committee for Republicans and also the president. It's that simple. And he needed to do something to get his base back. And that is what he did. And he has gotten his base back. He went to ground and he went to ground with the single most important issue he knows had more to do with electing him president than anything else. This is the immigration issue and the border. More than the economy, more than the Russians, more than anything else that he talked about. This build the wall thing really took, why? Because it's simple. People are concerned about immigration. Here you have this visual image of a wall. This is going to solve all of our problems. People don't do well when you start talking to them about policy, whether it's defense policy or diplomacy. They don't want to hear that stuff. They don't want to talk about economic policy. They just want to know you're going to fix it or that you're going to do this thing. I will put you back to work. I will save the country. I will make America great again. I will solve this border problem. Will the wall solve our problems? I don't know. Are people who own property along the so-called wall going to sell their land? Will the government take the land? Can the government take the land? Is an emergency going to take care of all that? Again, those are all things that are worthwhile of discussion, but none of that matters. And I don't think any of it matters to the president either. The whole shutdown and the wall debacle or brilliant political move is designed to do one thing and one thing only. Get everyone talking about what Trump wants to talk about. He has done this again and again and again, and every time the Democrats fall for it, and every time the media falls for it, and every time he either grows his base or maintains his base. When you have even Congressman Cortez has an opinion about the border that mentions Trump, even Tom Steyer, the billionaire activist who wants to spend all his money to impeach Trump, is talking about Trump. Every commentator and writer and activist, down to my friend down the street who posts socialist crap on her her social media page all the time with busy, memes about hating Trump and everything else. She's talking about the wall, and people are going 86 and 87 comments about the wall and all that it means. It doesn't matter whether the people who are the correspondents are for it or against it. The president is driving the conversation, and he's going to continue to drive the conversation as long as necessary or until he finds something new to use, something he can use with this issue, because this is how he manipulates the media and thus all of us, because he has mastered the weakness of the political opposition and social media, cable news, and so forth, in that it requires something to react to in order to be relevant. And as long as it continues to react to everything, so it's reactionary, and as long as it continues to react, and especially react with outrage over everything the president does, right or wrong, he is going to continue to use it with great advantage. He doesn't care if you think he's a child. He doesn't care if you think he's right, in my view. He is just using this as a political cudgel to grow the base and get what he wants. And if I had to guess, I would say, despite all the predictions that he's going to have to cave, and he's how many times have you heard these people say, well, you know, the president is really blocked in, you know, politically. He really can't do anything. That's insane. It's an insane thing to say, especially if you're a Roy Cohn aficionado. I would say that his chances of getting some kind of barrier are good. And quite honestly, I think it's fair to say that so far, aside from a few government workers in some areas who have suffered from the government shutdown, and nobody cares about them, the truth of the matter is that the government shutdown is also working for him. And finally, the truth of the whole thing is, the whole immigration question is, that our immigration laws need, I hesitate to use the term, reform. I'll post a link to the podcast I did about immigration. Roughly every 2 years, the United States Congress regulates in some way, shape, or form re-regulates or relitigates or rewrites the laws or reforms the laws for our immigration policy in the United States. Most people don't know that. Some of the things the president talked about are true, and some of the things the opposition talks about are true. Congress has to act on this issue, and that is not likely to happen in the near future until there's resolution. As far as a timeline of 240 years or 260 years in terms of their act, their ability to act as a Congress, this is getting processed, basically. It's just going to take them time to figure out what they have to do. They are going to have to arrive at some kind of resolution. Now, if the president actually wants to do something, all he has to do is rescind benefits being paid to illegal immigrants, which in a sense is what he might actually be doing with the government shutdown partially. I haven't checked that out. He can declare an emergency people. It would produce court fights, but the courts may side with him. And this is the key, because many presidents have used executive power. But most importantly, Congress gave the president power to declare an emergency to get things done specifically and explicitly without regard to the law. It says that right in the law, and specifically in relation to military construction projects if he declares an emergency. Congress in the 1970s granted U.S. presidents the right to declare an emergency. There are several emergencies in effect in the United States. Going back to 2014, people were writing about America being ruled through emergency fiat. But if Congress prevented asylum seekers and otherwise illegal immigrants from getting benefits from federal governments and cut grants for state benefits programs, the rush at the border would be greatly reduced so as to obviate the need for a wall anyway. Congressman Ron Paul has said that recently. I agree with him. I think we do need immigration reform. And I think it is a crisis to a certain extent, but you may not. And that is something that the fact checkers and you are going to have to figure out. Until there's a resolution on this issue, Trump or some other Trump is going to continue pulling this kind of nonsense to shore up a political base and get what they want. And if you don't like it, cry me a river. Well, it goes without saying that in the news these days, with all the talk about foreign manufacturing and tariffs and everything else with President Trump, some companies are thinking about bringing their manufacturing back to the United States. If this is you, if you're considering manufacturing here in the United States, I want to recommend Depot Star, D-E-P-O-T, American Design Engineering and Manufacturing, right here in Minnesota. Visit their website at depotstar.com. All right, you guys, thank you so much for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast and subscribing and especially sharing my posts on social media. That is the secret sauce when it comes to getting more people to be exposed to the podcast, and I really appreciate that. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Spotify, on Google Play Music. You can also use, Stitcher, but I'm going to get to that in a second. Alexa works with TuneIn, so if you have Alexa, it will, and you're tied into TuneIn, you're going to be able to get the podcast with Alexa. I've actually seen that demonstrated with my podcast, so I know it works. And I do appreciate the donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for checking me out on Facebook and Twitter. And thanks for listening to podcast 794, the Bob Davis Podcast's Controlling the Media Battle Space. And when it doesn't work out for the opposition, The president says, cry me a river. Or if it doesn't work out for him, they say, cry me a river. It's just politics.
Now you say you're lonely. You cry the long night through. Well, you can cry me a river. Cry me a river. I cried a river over you. Now you say you're sorry for being so untrue. Well, you can cry me a river. Cry me a river. I cried a river over you. You drove me, nearly drove me out of my head, while you never shed a tear. Remember, I remember all that you said. Told me love was too plebeian. Told me you were through with me. And now you say you love me. Well, just to prove you do, come on and cry me a river. Cry me a river. I cried a river over you. I cried a river over you. I cried a river.